And we have our next guest with us, Robert Putnam. Can you hear me? Are you there?
I am indeed. Can you hear me all right?
We can. I'm going to, if we get disconnected by any chance, please call us right back, but I think we're in good shape.
Great, thanks.
Let me introduce you. Robert D. Putnam is the Malkin Professor of Public Policy at Harvard and visiting professor and director of the Manchester Graduate Summer Program in Social Change, University of Manchester in the UK. Raised in a small town in the Midwest and educated at Swarthmore, Oxford, and Yale, he has served as Dean of the Kennedy School of Government, is a member of the National Academy of Sciences, the British Academy, the American Philosophical Society, and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and past president of the American Political Science Association. Well, Robert, we want to get right to the book American Grace, which is recently published and prominently reviewed in the New York Times and also the Wall Street Journal. And I also want to mention in the studio with me, my name is Larry, is David and Molly. David and Molly are both from the Boston area. Molly works with MassPIRG, organizing students, and David is with Green Corps that supplies arms and legs, organizing the environmental movement throughout the country, and both have some questions for you. So welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Larry. Hi, David and Molly. I'm glad to meet you.
Hi.
Excellent. This is a monumental study and really quite fascinating. And I like the opening paragraph, although probably not the rest of the review as much, from the Wall Street Journal. It says, after a seemingly endless procession of tendentious and hotly argued books espousing the new atheism and blaming religion for all that's wrong with the world, American Grace comes as a welcome balm, offering a reasoned discussion of religion and public life. And I probably, a lot of people think it's entirely too reasoned. But in any event, what in your mind are the most exciting findings? What really thrilled you and your co-author the most to discover?
Well, Larry, the book is an attempt to provide the most comprehensive and the most in-depth survey of the role of religion in American life over the last half century. Religion is a big part of American life. The average American is more religious in his behavior or her beliefs than the average Iranian, for example. And religion is an important contributor to American democracy, as we show in some places in the book. On the other hand, taken in high doses, religion can often be toxic to democratic civic society. You only need to look around the world today to see that places that are highly religious and highly diverse in their religions, as we are also characterized by mayhem. Think Belfast or Bosnia or Beirut or Baghdad or Bombay, lots of places that are as religious as we are and as diverse as we are not, as we are, and as we found in the book, highly religiously tolerant. So I suppose in a way the most, we spend a lot of time, the subtitle of the book that David Campbell and I have written is American Grace, How Religion Divides and Unites Us. And we spend a good deal of time on the ways in which religion does divide us. That's an important part of the story. But I think probably the part that surprised us the most was that Americans, even despite the fact that we've become more polarized in our religious views and more polarized religiously and politically over the last half century, still turn out to be, in personal terms, remarkably tolerant of people of other religions, or indeed of no religion at all.
Well, let me just ask to clarify that. It feels to me that, and maybe this is only one segment of religion in America, maybe it's even one segment of the Christian religion in America, that there is a blurring of the line between religion and politics, that there's almost a desire, it feels like, to impose the personal religious beliefs or the community religious beliefs of some small groups to incorporate them into American law and not to be settled until it is. And am I accurate that? Did your survey find that voice is indeed as strong as it sometimes feels?
We certainly found that voice. We found a group of people in the survey who we call true believers, who believe basically that their religion is the only true religion, and that they would like to have the whole society reflect their moral values. But we also found that's a quite small fraction of all Americans. It's a small fraction even of the most religious Americans. It's roughly 10% of the American population, but it's a minority of evangelical Protestant Christians. So it's a minority. It's a fact. But you know, we live in a strange world in which the view you get from the public media is that we are it's like a funhouse mirror. A funhouse mirror that somehow exaggerates the two extremes. If you just looked at the media, you'd think that we were divided into two really angry and completely incompatible Americas. One America that is deeply religious and deeply conservative, especially on moral issues, homosexuality and abortion and so on. And another America that is deeply secular and angry at religion and says that religion, as the new atheists say, religion poisons everything. And both of those views are present in America. There's about 10% of Americans who are, as I say, true believers, and about maybe 6% of America who are fervent and angry atheists. The vast majority of Americans actually are neither of those categories. About 80% of Americans say that there are there are truths in many religions. About 80 or 90% of Americans say that you can be a perfectly good American without having any religious faith at all. Only a small fraction of Americans say that they would like to impose or like to have their moral values apply across the society. Americans are when you actually talk to them, as we did, we talked to 3,000 Americans from all walks of life, a random sample of America, and we spent a lot of time hanging out with people in various different religious sorts of religions across America. Americans as a whole are much more tolerant, we find, than you would think if you only read the papers or listened to the talk shows.
I just want to remind our listeners that you're listening to WSLR, Low Power FM, 96.5, your community radio station in Sarasota. And our guest is Robert Putnam, Harvard professor, who is talking to us about his new book, American Grace, A Study of Religion and Society in America. David, you had a question for Dr. Putnam.
Robert, we were actually at the head of the show talking. I know this is focusing a little bit more maybe on what divides us versus what unites us, but hopefully we can talk about what unites us later on. But we were talking at the top of the show about the Tea Party and about the Koch brothers, and I'm wondering why you think that this kind of 10% on the margins is amassing so much political power versus the 80% that feels like the regular mainstream American voice around religion is getting totally drowned out, and what that rise is about.
Well, there are several things to say about that. First of all, we don't have. I want to make clear what the voice that we're trying to express in the book American Grace is a book that doesn't take sides in the culture wars on either side and tries to just call the facts as we see them. And the second point I want to make is that if we're talking about political polarization and you're talking about the Tea Party doesn't actually. If you look at it, is there are parts of it that are very closely associated with the religious right. And there are parts of the Tea Party, the Massachusetts Tea Party, for example, that is actually quite secular, not actually very religious. I mean, not in the religious in the sense that you're using it in political terms. I think that political polarization, as exemplified by the Tea Party and by the Koch brothers and others, I think that's a serious, serious, grave problem in America. And I don't think that's just an optical illusion. I do think that that it is a mistake that's made by everybody on all sides here to conflate how people in America feel about religion and how our politics is evolving. And I repeat, I think that political polarization is a serious issue. Now, where that comes from is actually mainly not religion. It's mainly coming, I think, from changes in the political system. Partly the outsized role that campaign finance that political financing has come to play in our politics. I think that's a serious part of the problem. Part of it comes from gerrymandering, so that politicians have an incentive to appeal to the most extreme elements in their political base, not to the moderate middle. And I think there are probably other things that have caused that actually rather frightening divide in our politics.
Well, it's in the studio we have one of us grew up in a Catholic tradition, one in a Protestant tradition, and one in a Jewish tradition. So we represent different cultural experiences in our early lives, but are probably all identified as progressive politically. It seems maybe that there's such a strong spillover from the voice of the religious right, maybe during the Bush years, not so much now, that we have a hard time distinguishing what is political division and what is religious division. And maybe in that case your book is a clearer insight into maybe a spillover. Maybe we're thinking more of our political divisions are a result of religious divisions than you've found actually they are.
Yeah, I think there's several... We're trying to put that... I mean, of course, that I know that milieu that you're describing very well. It's the milieu in which I live. And I am myself a progressive politically, but I do think we found in this book that it's those of us in that kind of community, that kind of portion of the American political spectrum that you're describing, are not immune to these myths about how our politics develops. For example, the period that we are just living through, and maybe. We think maybe it's a period that's coming to a close, but at any rate, the period we're just living through is a very unusual period in which religion has become identified with the political right. That's not been true historically in America. Historically, most of the major progressive periods in American history have been associated, deeply, closely associated with religion and with religious, even with evangelical, fervor. The American Revolution, in its more egalitarian emphasis, came out of the so-called First Great Awakening. The abolition movement, the white abolition movement, came out of the Second Great Awakening, an evangelical fervor that swept the north of America, in the northern part of the United States, in the early 19th century. The Civil Rights movement came directly out of churches, first black churches and then white churches. This period that we've lived through, in which religion has come to be associated so exclusively with the Democratic, with the Republican Party, is a very unusual period. And our book, American Grace, tries to place it in a broader historical context.
Well, I know Kennedy was very defensive about his religion, and at that time, I think, and that's not that long ago, at least that was the first time I voted, Catholics were considered to be Democrats, especially urban Catholics.
Indeed. The so-called God gap, the fact that if you're going to church, you're likely to be Republican. That is a creation, basically, of the 1970s and especially 1980s, and then growingly, I mean, increasingly since then. But as late as you say, as the 1960s or even the 1970s and 80s, there were still lots of progressives in the pews on Sunday mornings, and that increasing division has been driven at least as much by people changing their religion to fit their politics rather than the other way around. The driving conflict here underneath that's caused this polarization is more political than it is religious.
Another theme in your book, Molly, I think you have a question for Robert Putnam.
Yeah, so Mr. Putnam, thanks for joining us. I agree with you that I think that a lot of... religious people bring a lot of progressives bring their religious beliefs into the political realm. Growing up in New York City in a very progressive Jewish community, that's definitely a root for the work that I do in the world and how I see our role. But then in the Wall Street Journal review of your book, it makes a claim that you believe that religious Americans are better neighbors and better members of the community. And I'm wondering if you can explain what you mean by that and how you see it playing out and what the causes of that are.
Sure. Of course, Molly, I would prefer that you actually read the book rather than the review of a book in a conservative...
well, we have the book here. We've all read...
I was just gently teasing Molly.
That will be for later on.
Sure. No, I will respond to your question, Molly. It's a perfectly reasonable question. We do, in the book, try to make tote up the ways in which religion of all sorts either contributes to or doesn't contribute to American democracy. And let me begin with the bad news from a religious point of view. Religious people are somewhat less tolerant of differences of lifestyle and differences of opinion and so on. So we ask people about various civil liberty questions. Would you allow someone to defend, to give a speech defending Al-Qaeda or defending Osama bin Laden? And surprisingly, most Americans said yes, they would. They do think it's a right. Everybody has a right to even to give a speech like that. 65% of Americans say people have a perfect right to give a speech defending Osama bin Laden. The fraction among religious people is slightly lower than that. It's 55%. So there's a little bit of a religious edge in a negative direction on the issues of tolerance of civil liberties. But on all other measures of being a good citizen or being a good neighbor, religious people are much higher, and they're higher even when you hold constant all the other things that affect how good we are as citizens and neighbors. Let me give some examples. Religious people are much more likely to give philanthropy, and not just to religious causes, but to secular causes. Religious people are much more likely to volunteer, much more likely to volunteer, and not just to volunteer as a church usher, but also to volunteer for working in soup kitchens or tutoring kids or working on other sorts of community projects. Religious people are two or three times more likely to say that they have worked on some community project in the previous 12 months. Religious people are two or three times more likely to say that they're they work on social reform movements, not right wing movements. This is not people who are saying that they're, you know, going out to picket abortion clinics. These are people who are working locally on social and political reform. Religious people are two or three times more likely to take part in other sorts of community civic activities. They're more likely to give money to a panhandler. They're more likely to let someone cut in front of them cut in front of them in line. They're more likely to give blood, and on. There are probably 20 different measures that we show in the book. Religious people are substantially more likely to help their community and to help their neighbors than less religious people. It has nothing to do with the content of the religion. The same pattern applies exactly to Jews and to Catholics and to evangelicals and to mainline Protestants. It has virtually nothing to do with their theology. It does. If you are involved in a religious community, it turns out you're more likely to be community-minded in all the ways that I described, even if you don't believe in God, but you're involved in a religious community. So suppose you don't believe in God, but you end up going to church suppers because your spouse, say, is religiously involved. That kind of a person, it's not the theology, it's being involved in a network of other people who are also concerned about some religious or spiritual values that they share in common. That's the facts.
And then, do you think this would? Is there an alternative? So, this network of social responsibility and civic engagement. If there were a secular alternative, and that there was a more universal training in how to be a good citizen through our, would that work instead?
That's a really good question, Molly, and we've spent a lot of time trying to think about that question. The empirical answer is there isn't any. We looked quite hard to see whether we could find a similar effect from, I don't know, being involved in civic associations or being involved in environmental groups or whatever, and we couldn't find it. If I can just be humorous in summarizing the finding, my earlier book called Bowling Alone used bowling leaves as a kind of a semi-serious example of social connection and so on, and the moral of that book was bowling in leagues is better than bowling alone, better for you and better for your community. And the new book says, yeah, but actually bowling in church leagues, that's the really
that's great. That's a height of community.
But So what's so special about church bowling leagues or church suppers? And the honest answer is we don't know for sure. It would be interesting if we could find some secular equivalent of that, Molly. And maybe, I don't want to say there aren't any, but there aren't very many of those in America, or else we would have been able to find them. I can tell you the things it isn't. It isn't trade unions, for example. It isn't professional associations. It isn't the people you know at work. The more friends you have at work, it isn't the case that the more friends you have at work, the nicer you are. It isn't the case that the more involved and more, you know, the closer, the more connections you have with people in your garden society, the better neighbor you are. It is true that the more involved you are in your church community, the nicer you are. And we can see it. We even think this is pretty likely to be causal, because we've interviewed the same people twice, and we can see that if you get more friends at church, you become nicer. So it's not certainly, but it's probably a causal relationship. What is it about church friends that make them supercharged friends? I wish we knew. We're trying to work on that, but it's an important question. But so far, we've not found it.
It's interesting to compare. I mean, I find that our guest is Robert Putnam, who's co-authored this new book called American Grace, and we're talking about that, which is a very thorough study of patterns of behavior and thought in religion in America. I'm the one who grew up in a Catholic environment, and I wouldn't say there were the suppers, but the experience of going to church was really solitary. I mean, you went and you heard Mass, and then you kind of left and went back to your own family. As an adult and taking my kids with a wife who was not Catholic to the Congregational Church in Concord, Massachusetts, which is very almost an immediate bond with the community, but it's not a creedal church. There was no set of beliefs. The liturgy was, you know, certainly a Christian liturgy, but the fact is that people bonded around a whole variety of both of spirit. There was spirituality, there was social action, there was family support, all sorts of things. And I'm wondering if those are almost unintended consequences, or are they direct consequences of church communities?
Well, I think what we show in the book is that with respect to the issues we're talking about now, that is, with respect to how good a citizen you are, how much often you give blood, and how often you talk to your neighbors, and how often you take part in local civic affairs, and so on. Pardon me, I've got a bad cold, which is why I'm coming down to Sarasota as soon as I can.
Yes.
It isn't the creed. It's not the creed. It's the community. It's not, as we say in the book, from this point of view, it's not the faith. It's the communities of faith that matter. I don't want to say that the faith is unimportant. Obviously, for the people involved, the content of their faith is very important. But for the social effects, which is what David Campbell and I in the book Bowling Alone are concerned about, it's the community that matters. I mean, it's the social effects that matter, and community matters for that. not the faith, but the community of faith.
I have to tell our listeners, while Dr. Putnam clears his throat, that he was scheduled to be part of our program last week, and it sounds like you did catch a fairly serious bug, and it's lingered on a little bit. Sorry to hear that. Hope you feel better.
I'm afraid that's right. But as you know, and as I'm sure you're going to tell your listeners, I'm coming down to the Sarasota area, and will be speaking publicly about this book next week.
You're coming to Forum Truth. That is this Thursday at 7:30. Is it in Holly Hall or the Hyatt? I can't recall which. I don't have it right in front of me. But those of us who know Forum Truth and who anticipate your presence will know, and go to the website and look to see. I just can't remember. They have the talk at both places. But this Thursday night at 7:30, Dr. Putnam is going to come and talk about this book. I'll meet you there. I'm very excited about
it. It's Holly Hall.
And just so that you have something more concrete to think about, Today will be about the sixth or seventh day in a row of 80-degree and sunny weather and beautiful breezes, and it is definitely going to help you feel a whole lot better even now thinking about it.
That's certainly true. Thanks.
Listen, I'll let you go. I want to just remind our listeners again to talk about we're talking about your book, American Grace, co-author. We haven't talked about your co-author.
David Campbell
from Notre Dame, as I recall.
That's right.
And the two of you have written this extensive survey of religion in American life called American Grace. Brilliant, and it's certainly stimulated some conversations here among the three of us and hopefully among our listeners. We really appreciate your coming along, and we look forward to seeing you next Thursday here in Sarasota.
Thank you very much, Larry, and thanks, David and Molly, for your comments, too.
Take good care. Get better.
Thank you. Bye.